This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 172, sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service and Netflix. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 172. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Josh is excited. We are at iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, although not this week. And one of us picks the best ones, writes about it on the website, talks about it on the podcast, and along with other books of the week and various topics of interest. And apparently we need to emphasize this again, but this is a review show with spoilers. So if we're talking about a book you were reading in trade or haven't read yet, skip that section, pause the show, do whatever you like, but don't come complaining to us about it. Josh.
Yes.
You had the pick this week.
Oh, good Lord, I did. Weird week, I think. Like, I bought, I think, 8 or 9 books. Not a ton. Half of them were Image. Like, I bought a lot of Image books this week.
It was a big Image week.
Yeah, it was. And it was good. I read a lot of good comic books this week, which I thought was fun. I like it when I don't have, like, a ton of books, and they're all really kind of good. Like, that makes for a very satisfying comic book experience. And, you know, there was a bunch of books that I could have gone with, but at the end of the day, I went with the fun factor, and I had the most fun reading Guardians of the Galaxy number 10 by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, with art by somebody Walker. Where is it? I don't know.
It is Brad Walker.
Brad Walker. I'm sorry. It's one of those names that I can't seem to remember because it's if Drifter came into town, it was Brad Walker. You know, I picked this book after I read another. You know, there was a lot of other books that could have been pick of the week. But when I was reading this, I was laughing out loud a bunch of times. And it was just occurring to me that, you know, and we've mentioned this before, it's never been a pick of the week, that this is not the kind of book that I would want anything to do with on paper. And I'm just so impressed that now, even after 10 issues, like, the novelty hasn't worn off. If anything, it's getting more interesting, and I'm having more fun with it as I'm getting into this world. And, you know, basically, it's just it's very similar to the things that we've said about the Nova book that Abnett and Lanning do. You know, it's fun. It's good Marvel comics. But it's not the same book by any stretch of the imagination. I don't, you know, like, we talk about, you know, Nova's it was about one person. This is more like a team book, and they are different. So it doesn't feel like they're just doing the same tricks over and over again. I think this book's more, I've said fun, but it's funnier. It's sort of a sillier book, but not so much so that it's not like a jokey book, I guess.
Well, it balances the fun with the, I mean, like, the Adam Warlock scene is not jokey or fun at all. Well, you know, like,
I think, and that's actually one of the points that I think I wrote in my review, is that it balances all those things really well. There's not too much of any one thing.
Yeah.
And it gives you just as much of everything as you need, and you move on to the next thing. Just a lot of fun, and there were all sorts of little things about this that impressed me. You know, right off, like, what we have is sort of the precursor to the War of Kings, or I guess it's part of the War of Kings now. They're in the negative zone. I may have these details mixed up because that's not the kind of thing that I pay tons of attention
to. They're in the negative zone. You're right.
They're in the negative zone, and Blastar is trying to take over the prison, which is the prison from Civil War number 42. And Star-Lord ends up there somehow, and he's trying to fend him off, and then all the prisoners turn on him, and so it's just him and Jack Flagg. Jack Flagg, you'll remember from Warren Ellis's Thunderbolts number 110. It was my pick of the week a long time ago, and it was the last thing that I liked about Warren Ellis's Thunderbolts was that character, because he, you know, supposedly got killed or taken down, but he's been in this prison the whole time, and he's like a low-rent Captain America, but he's in a wheelchair, and he has silly, silly hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Guardians find out who they are, but the jokes still go on, like, you know, we're the Guardians. Who? Who are you? And, you know, to have Reed Richards be, like, they go through this whole speech where they're telling Reed Richards about the infinite danger at the end. He goes, one more question. Who are you again? Who is this? And he's like, I can't get no respect. You know, I just had a ton of fun with this. I think I'd mentioned, you know, the art is not a style that stood out to me immediately. But as I went through it, you know, trying to think about what it was that I liked about it, I sort of noticed that he was doing a really good job with the acting of the characters, and it's very clean. And the more that I looked at it, the more that I was like, "This art's perfect for this book right now." And I'm not familiar with Brad Walker that much, but, you know, he did a really good job with the storytelling of it. It's tons of characters, tons of stuff going on. You know, between him and the writers, I was never confused about what was happening or who anybody was, and it's just good comic books, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm loving this just as much as you are, because I've always loved the Guardians of the Galaxy, and Abnett and Lanning can't do anything wrong as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if this is pick of the week worthy, though. I mean, it was good. It was just, but it was, for me, it was kind of more the same, you know. And actually, I'm not really in love with this with this kind of story arc, the fighting Blastar for the prison type thing. You know, I kind of want to get back to them as the team and getting back to whatever's going on with Starhawk, and I'm actually more interested in what's going on with Adam Warlock. You know, I feel like this has kind of been like a an action sequence divergence, you know?
See, this is funny. The things that you mentioned are the things that I was like, all right, let's get back to it.
Yeah.
And so, I think it speaks to, we both think the book is good, but for
different reasons.
You know, we have different tastes. Yeah, my tastes, I was like, I really enjoy this. You know, on the third page, Skeleton Key, the character who opens the doors or whatever, you know, he goes up to Blastar, and like he comes up to Blastar's belt, basically, you know, and he turns around and he's like, I'm the one who opened the door for you. And then Blastar pats him on the head. Yeah. Well done.
Well, yeah, Blastar is always a good opportunity for some humor with the villain. The story is great and the action was great. I wasn't in love with the art by Brad Walker. I think it was just like very average, very just kind of, it got the job done. The standout throughout this whole thing is in the background is Groot. Because this is probably the least developed character of all the Guardians of the Galaxy. This guy who's a tree, but if I don't know if you've noticed, but over the 10 yes. issues, he's growing every issue.
He was like an inch in the first issue.
Yeah, now he's huge.
Now he's like 50 feet tall.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious where he's going to go with that. And
Did you notice that his suit is too short?
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't.
The legs and the arms are too short, yeah. And it's not anything they're focusing on at all. It's just happening in the background. I love that kind of thing. What's really funny is that
you're really toned into the comedy aspect of it, which I'm not. I chuckle here and there, but like, you know, it's I don't know. It's funny how we both enjoy the series for completely different reasons.
And I think that's interesting. Yeah. Like, you are probably want to know, what's the deal with Captain Victory? I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Oh, I totally do. Yeah.
No, I know. It's just, and it's not my thing. And I like that because there's a lot here, and I don't think either of us feel shortchanged.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the neat things about it. You know, it's just like this book and Captain Britain and Nova. These are the books that are, you know, outside of all that other stuff, that are just being fun Marvel comics these days that I'm really glad they're around.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I definitely think we're better off for having Guardians of the Galaxy being published and Nova being published and stuff like that. like I said with this one, I mean, you're right, it was a weird week, and as I think about it, I don't actually know what my pick of the week would have been. I just didn't know, it probably wouldn't have been this, just because it was like, oh, it's good, you know, it's like that kind of more of the same kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, it struck all the right notes for me at the right time. It wasn't a spectacular issue. It was like, this issue is better than all the other ones. It was just like, I don't know, maybe it hit me at the right time, but I had the most fun reading this. So that's why.
Which is important. That's an important aspect when you're reading your comic books, because we're reading them to have fun.
Theoretically.
It shouldn't be work. It shouldn't be an effort. It shouldn't be anything that you're like, oh, I got to read my comics. You know?
Wait, what? What?
Shouldn't
what
be happened? Those things?
You should just have fun reading them.
Wednesday is the new Monday.
Yeah. But cool, excellent. I don't know. I am glad to see that Abnett Lanning addressing the prison in the Negative Zone, because apparently the rest of mainstream Marvel just forgot about that little plot point.
I love that. I love that they're picking and choosing things from stuff that happened.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Flag and the prison and all that stuff and using it. And that's the kind of continuity that for me is very fun. Not the is Batman left or right-handed continuity, but the that's a shout out to the dude, you know, if nothing else. Yeah. I noticed. I think it's silly, but I noticed. You know, if you don't know, you're better off. But picking and choosing things from the past that you can then use and build on, and that's neat. Like, it's cool because that stuff can remain forgotten.
I'm just continually impressed by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning's writing. I'm just
absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's almost daunting because it's one of those things that seems very effortless and fun, but there's so much juggling going on.
Yeah, totally.
Did either of you guys happen to pick up The Great Unknown number one?
No.
From Image Comics. This is a five-part series written and drawn by Duncan Rouleau, who you probably have heard of. He's part of the Man of Action Collective, the Joe Casey, Joe Kelly, Steven Siegel, Duncan Rouleau group. He just did the Metal Men series, which I didn't read and didn't know anything about. I picked this up because I wasn't buying a lot of books, and I thought, well, here's something cool to try, and I didn't really know what it was. And it was, you know, like for like the first half of it, I was like, I don't like this. But then by the end, I was like, oh, I do like this, which is always really cool. Like it took about half the book to sort of win me over. Basically, it's about this guy who is, he's a genius, but he's a slacker. Like, imagine the dude who has a bunch of PhDs but still lives with his parents and doesn't have a job and gets drunk every night. Okay. That's him. And everybody's telling him,
Will Hunting?
Yes. Well, the idea is that, and everybody keeps, he's like, no, I'm working on something. It's going to be huge. And everyone's like, sure, you've been saying that forever. And nobody believes him. And then you find out at the end, somebody actually has been stealing his ideas all along. He's come up with all these patents, and they always hit before he gets a chance to do anything with them. But it's because somebody's been spying on him. The whole thing is done. The art style is really clean and simple, cartoony, really, really nice art. The whole thing is done in blue and black tones. So it's got sort of an otherworldly quality. Fun. I really want to know what's going to happen next with it. And I really enjoyed it. It's just a series that I think if you're looking for something new, it's like a little sci-fi mystery whodunit thing, done by a really, skilled cartoonist. It's a really good thing to pick up. This was almost my pick. So that was the other cool thing.
Okay. Amazing Spider-Man number 587. Connor, I assume you picked this up as well?
Yes.
So this continues the excellent story arc that Mark Guggenheim's been writing and John Romita Jr. has been drawing, that involves the mayoral race and who menaces, and this particular issue focuses on the fact that Spider-Man's been arrested and kind of what's going on with Spider-Man in jail and being, kind of arraigned and that sort of thing. Connor, what did you think?
I think this might be the best arc.
Yes.
So far, the Brand New Day arc. Everything's coming together. There's been some very interesting twists and turns. The Spider Tracer reveal was completely unexpected, but very interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to lead to some very harsh consequences, I think, by the time we get to the end of this story.
Yeah.
Basically, the reveal was that the Spider Tracer killer wasn't any one person. It was a bunch of corrupt cops who were framing Spider-Man because they were sick of him.
Conspiracy.
Sick of him meddling, sick of him screwing everything up, so they either place spider tracers on dead bodies or we find out at the end here that they've been murdering people and framing Spider-Man for it. So one of them being his roommate, so that's going to be interesting.
And what's even more interesting is so the woman cop finds out about this and she tries to – first she confronts Spider-Man's roommate and the other cop about it, and then she's like, well, I want in on it in very unconvincingly manner. And then, right. But then she leaves and she goes to like the superior cop to report it, and turns out he's in on it too. And it just like it was one of those like and maybe this is Guggenheim and his like TV writing kind of skills coming out. It was just like it that conspiracy is getting so much deeper and so much more interesting as it goes. Like, because I wasn't really interested in the Spider Tracer idea thing because it's been going on for months. But now that we're in it, I'm just like every turn of that plot had me like gasping. So.
Well, it sounds like for years since the first one.
Totally. Yeah.
It sounds like your classic sort of raise the stakes kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh, here's the reveal.
Yep.
Oh, but here's the reveal. Oh, and you keep piling on.
And so what they're doing now, is that they're setting up Spider-Man's roommate and this other woman cop to take the fall for it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the issue actually was Matt Murdock, Spider-Man lawyer.
As always, yep. Well, what was funny was
kept showing up with Ritz.
But what was funny was that at one point, so they're like going over. So Matt Murdock again comes to Spider-Man's defense, and I don't know if it was a joke or what, but they pulled the same stunt again.
Like, yeah, they did.
Like, do you remember when it must have been in the past year when Spider-Man was being sued and they were addressing whether or not he has to take his mask off in court, and so Murdock had all their friends dress up like Spider-Man and go into the courtroom again.
Yeah.
Courtroom. Well, they did that again for one panel. Which is just like, if you're reading Spider-Man, like, it just made me laugh. I was like, oh, he's just going to do that every time he gets arrested. And it was almost the same thing distilled down to two panels.
Yeah, it was a nice little. It didn't focus on it. It was a nice little storytelling bit.
Yeah.
It's just really, really strong, and the art is fantastic. But yeah. Now Spider-Man's in prison for now, and he's been let loose in general population. So.
Yeah,
it's about to get really ugly.
Yeah, you've got echoes of the Daredevil in prison, kind of like all the prisoners want a piece of.
But does he have his costume on?
Yes, he does.
That's weird.
That's Matt Murdock. He's done some legal wrangling, some fancy footwork.
Matt Murdock, attorney at law.
Couldn't have done that for himself.
He shows up waving pieces of paper, and then he can't take his mask off.
He's got a writ.
My pick of the week was Robin 183, which is the final issue of the Robin series for now. rumors are that they're going to after the whole Batman thing is over, they're going to restart some of the old titles again. But we'll see if that actually happens. But and in this issue, basically, it's Tim's transformation into more of a Bruce Wayne-esque character. And
is he still scarred?
No.
That was my only thing about the book that's kind of annoyed me and took me out of it for a while, was that his hair is all back and he's not scarred. And
That's bullshit. Sorry.
Well, it feels like they introduced that as like something that was going to be a long term story thing, and they just thought, you know what, just drop it. No,
it's
like
comics.
Seriously, like
it's comics.
But it is. But let's just move on and get past it. And you know, sometimes that's the best thing to do. Which is, I mean, it's sort of what happened with Spider-Man, and look what's happening now. You know, like just drop it, move along.
It would have been fine if Jason Todd hadn't asked him about his burns healing, and he said, okay. they're still healing.
Oh, it's like Dallas.
He's wearing. Are you wearing a wig then? Like what's happening?
Yeah. Well, it was a really good one single issue. I mean, I guess it's like one and done sort of story, you know, that was connected to the larger one, but it was like a nicely structured, I thought.
Yeah, and it was really strong, really really strong characterization stuff. Basically, mm-hmm. You know, Tim's way more harder edge than he used to be, and you can see that Tim is way more like Bruce than anybody ever will be. He's mm-hmm. You know, Dick is never going to be Bruce. He could be Batman, but he'll never be Bruce.
Right.
Whereas Tim can be Bruce. He can totally go into that world of focused solely on justice and revenge. And
they've been building him slowly towards it because of, you know, like his father got killed in Identity Crisis and stuff like that. Like it just stuff keeps piling on him. So he's got more reasons to it, I guess.
I wanted to briefly comment on these origin stories in the back.
Yeah.
What they've been doing. I've really been enjoying them. And one thing I really like about them is they've been employing the Geoff Johns device of showing a bunch of future events.
Mm-hmm.
The last page shows you these things are going to happen in the future to this character. And it really sets up a nice thing to look forward to. And you're like, ooh, what's that mean? Like, when's that going to happen? So I've really been enjoying them. For the most part, they've been really strong little 2-3-page stories.
Yeah, they have really been. One of the things that I wanted to mention about this story is that I looked at it, I was like, this looks really good. And it's Freddie E. Williams also.
Yeah, I think this is him actually drawing by hand, it looks like.
Wow. Oh, man. Or even if he's not, though, he enjoys it. There's like a different – it's not clean line-ish.
This was really good. It was a 5-star. Yep.
5-star, wow.
Yeah. This was – this makes me really look forward to the whole Battle of the Cowl thing, which starts when, Josh?
I don't know.
You did it. You did the interview with Tony Daniel.
You know everything about everybody you did an interview with?
When does that start? I don't know. He's the last person who would know when an event was starting.
I didn't say I was going to buy it. I was just like, yeah, sounds good.
Oh, this is why I love you guys.
Yeah, he set me up for that. He knew I wasn't going to know the answer.
Totally.
He's just trying to nail me.
Ron, you're gonna keep the pitchforks at bay by talking about X Factor 40 this week.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna keep them at bay or not. So X Factor number 40, we didn't talk about X Factor 39. Some could say we didn't talk about it because there was a plea from Peter David to not talk about it on the front page, but I didn't read that plea, and then I wrote about it and I gave it away. So I'm sorry if you found out through my article, but so X Factor 39 dealt with the fact that Siren had the baby. And something happened, and I'm not going to talk about it here because you know I'm going to attempt to respect whatever you know. I don't know why, but
that's stupid.
Yeah, it's
just
stupid.
Talk about
yeah,
it.
It's stupid. He absorbed the baby. Turns out the baby was a dupe, which a lot of people really liked. I can't believe I'm doing it. Peter David's totally going to hate me now. but it's been out for a month. Come on, if you're not reading X Factor, whatever. I didn't really like that as a plot device. And so Peter David's continued his personal plea on the front page, which I did read this time, and he ends it saying the climax of this issue will blow you away. Yeah, I wasn't really blown away by it. I mean, it was good. It was what I'd like to see, but let's just say someone who's been gone from this book is back. So
Havoc.
No, it's not Havoc. Oh my God, I would be so happy if it was Havoc. But what I thought was really interesting was that not really interesting, not in a good way or a bad way, but was that when we interviewed Peter David, Jesus, was that like 2-3 years ago now?
Yes.
Episode 4.
Episode 4 of the video show. We talked about the character Madrox, and he explained that he kind of sees Madrox as the Hamlet of the Marvel Universe. You know, which is that he's you know, he's kind of, you know, caught up in trying to decide what to do, struggling with decisions, that sort of thing, told to be or not to be. And so in this issue, Madrox is, you know, despondent and depressed and suicidal after what happened in the last issue. He's grown a beard and he goes to confront one of his dupes who's living in the wild. And he's suicidal, he's going to kill himself. And the dupe that he's confronting is a priest. So the priest is obviously trying to talk him down. And Madrox basically goes through a soliloquy that says, "I'm the Hamlet of the mutant world, always pondering what to do, struggling with decision," and like basically just use that whole bit in the issue. So some people are seeing this turn of events as like a, you know, kind of a turning point and great move in X-Factor. I still think the rails are a little bit off. Maybe the return of this character at the end will help it get better. That said, the art was exactly what I want from the art for this book. Valentine DeLandro did the art, and it was really, really good. It had that realistic, you know, kind of shadowy kind of, you know, like it reminded me of Pablo Raimondi. The art was where I'd want it to be. So maybe he's getting it back on track. Who knows? We'll see. But I wanted to address X Factor for all you X Factor fans out there.
Was it Polaris?
No, it wasn't Polaris. But it was a woman or a girl.
Cyclops?
No. Cyclops didn't go anywhere. So
is she sort of like Wikipedia?
A little bit like Wikipedia.
Like there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So
Is she a redheaded waitress from the Heroes universe?
No, she's not she died. So
she any sort of clone of Jean Grey?
No. Anyway, so so if you want to buy comic books and you need a place to buy them, you should check out DCBS or also known as the Discount Comic Book Service. They've got monthly specials up to 75% off, and usually they've got 40% off all the major publishers. It's a website where you can go and you can order your comics, and they'll ship them to you instead of going to a comic book store. They've got a flat rate of $5.95 for shipping on all U.S. orders, so no matter what you get, it's always $5.95, which is really good if you order a lot of comic books and it gets heavy. Basically, anything you can buy that's in the previews catalog from Diamond, you can get at DCBS. They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and ready to order. You can track your order online. So go to dcbservice.com. That's where you can set up an account and start ordering and get your comics delivered to you. It makes it much easier to shop for comics. Although, you know, they're a little delayed. So if you listen to the show, you might get spoiled. But, you know, that's your risk. So dcbservice.com.
The show doesn't expire.
It was not Moira MacTaggert, although that would have been awesome.
Psylocke.
Gaius Baltar. No? All right.
So Josh mentioned earlier in the show it was a big week for Image, and it was, and Four Eyes number 2 finally came out.
This would be the book that I got the most, what, not Four Eyes, responses to, I think, as I would call it that. This was the second issue of the acclaimed but delayed series Four Eyes. It actually came out this week. I know that because I talked to Joe Kelly.
Also because you bought it?
Yeah, no, I know.
Because it was in the store?
Yeah, that was why. This was good. It was beautiful, just like the last one.
This the pick of the week?
Because it was a transition it was a transition from the last one, sort of explaining how things are and setting it up and getting the story ready to get going at the end of this. And so while it was really nice and it was very beautiful and all sorts of interesting things happened, it wasn't my pick.
I thought it was really
How acclaimed could a series be after only one issue?
That's a good point.
I think that a good call is to have a first issue come out that's absolutely beautiful and then wait like 4 months and get people like but it only works if they really like the first issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's
so
like
so many things can go wrong after a first issue that I don't know if I can acclaim a series until it's almost, you know.
Listen, I'm speaking off the cuff here. He's out for me today.
He is.
No, I know people go nuts over it. I just wonder how.
Yeah,
you know,
after 22 pages, after 22 pages, how acclaimed can it be? I hear you.
It was an acclaimed issue.
Yeah,
really liked that first issue. I was among them. And you know, this was good. It was a nice explanation of a lot of things that were left up in the air in the last one, and it wasn't dissatisfying. It wasn't like they made everything that was cool about the last one, disappear. They're building up this world of you know, dragon hunters and fighters in Depression-era New York City. It's neat. It's good stuff, you know, but it didn't blow me away in terms of like a big reveal or like an amazing thing. It's just more good comics.
Do you think it hurt your opinion of it?
No, not at all. No, my opinion's not hurt of it. It just wasn't my pick of the week. Could have been on another week, you know.
I wish when they talk Italian, it was actually in Italian.
Did they just use a little brackety thing?
Yeah, they use a little brackety thing. So in my head, I try to do the Italian in my head.
Oh. Talking in Italian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like that.
The thing is, when I do that, everybody sounds like Mario.
It's me, Mario.
Hey, I'm a kid. I wanted to hunt the dragon.
Here we go.
Anyway.
So the best cover of the week probably goes to Noble Causes number 39.
You're not kidding.
Yeah, great cover. But not only was the cover great, but Jay Ferber and the artist, I can never pronounce the artist's name correctly, Yildiray Sinar, I think. What they did was with this issue was they totally played on the trope of having a section be this in the Silver Age kind of, you know, simpler colored, you know, kind of retro kind of style. But they did that in a way to explain something in the story, and it was just done so well that I just loved it. One of the characters, one of the main characters, Celeste, when they did the reboot about a year ago, she was married to an 80-year-old guy, and you just didn't understand why. And this issue explained it, that essentially she went back in time and fell in love with a superhero in the 50s named Captain Comet. And married him and lived together for 3 years, and then her body was breaking down because your body breaks down when you time travel or whatever. So she had to go back to the present, and so she swore to him that when she went back, she'd find him, and she did, and that's why they're together. And it was just such a elegant way of telling that, you know, kind of explaining that. It was a great issue. It was a good issue, and now I'm getting all sad because it's going to end soon.
Three left, right? 42 is the last one.
I think so.
Bleeds up.
Yeah. No, the next issue is the last one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, issue 40. So sad to see it go.
All right. Well, there's that.
Yep.
Speaking of, I don't know, dark? I'll go with dark. Spider-Man Noir is on here to be talked about.
It's really good. It's really, really good. This is issue 3 or 4, David Hein, and, you know, all these European artists is going to make this show difficult. Fabrice Sapolsky. This has been the noir line has been an interesting experiment. I think the X-Men series has completely gone off track, and it's hard to follow. But Spider-Man has been a really strong little tale of Depression era Spider-Man. And
I'm enjoying the X-Men series still. But anyway, okay, go on.
Well, that's not a surprise. But it's been fun and exciting. This one and the interesting characterizations and interesting plots, and it's been a really strong Spider-Man series, and I was just totally not expecting this when I picked it up. I picked it up on a lark, and it's just been fantastic.
Yeah, this noir experiment, they're doing Punisher Noir now. I mean, it seems like they really tapped into something, and so yeah, good for them. I'm not reading Spider-Man, but maybe I'll read the trade when it comes out. Since
it's been really, really strong, yeah.
Cool. So a bunch of comics came out this week, and if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see the list of all the ones that came out, and also there you can make your own pull list, and then after you get your comics, you can come back and rate and review them, and we always like to highlight a few of our community reviews, and the first one comes from Noro26, who reviewed Invincible number 59, and he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and of the total iFanboy community, 5% made this their pick of the week, and Noro26 says, I felt like I could relate to the villain. Powerplex may be crazy, but you really feel for him and his loss, and it's easy to see how someone would cope with accidentally killing his family by blaming it on Invincible. I love Otley's art and the way he depicted the hatred in Powerplex's eyes when he was in jail.
This issue is basically like a one-shot introducing a new villain.
From his point of view.
Yeah. I mean, like the first few pages I thought were really funny. Yeah. The rest of it was fairly standard, but good. Like at the end of it, I was like, okay, that's something. Like I thought he made a really good comment at the end of it, and I dug the issue. And it was you know, nice to get off the train for a little bit and look around in the Invincible universe. And you know, Kirkman will come back to that at some point.
So. Yeah, I thought it was a really good diversion. You know, it was a really good one issue kind of little experiment type thing. And I like how you know Kirkman and Otley are trying to keep the main story going, but also now they're in this, as they get into the, you know, the high numbers of the series, they're getting into these little kind of experiments. Let's see if we do this. Let's see if we do that. And it's a good way to keep themselves challenged. So
yeah, it was good. It was a good story. I liked it.
I still love the parking in rear on the Pentagon sign every time they show that. I love that it's the same shot every time.
I think I've ever noticed that. If you want to write your own reviews, you can go to ifanboy.com/comics. You pick your books that you want, and then you can write a review on any of those. And we highlight them here. We highlight them on Mondays on the website. We pick a few of the standouts and make sure we cover some of the books that the three of us can't get to. And so thanks for everyone who does that. It's a very valuable part of the community. We appreciate it. And now, book of the month.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
It's funny. When this was on the rundown, I was like, oh, yeah. Like... It's been a whole life in between the book of the month and now. I feel changed. I feel different.
So, surprise, surprise, what was the book of the month?
Book of the month was Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe Volume 5. Or Scott Pilgrim Volume 5, Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe. And this was literally the last thing I did before I got super sick was write this review, this book of the month review. I started to get sick as I was finishing it, which is more information than anybody needs, but that's why I feel changed. This is the newest volume in the big acclaimed Pilgrim series, which is this is the second to last volume. Volume 6 will be the final one, which I'm concerned because the movie uses 6's story in it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
It's the whole series, and I don't know how that's going to work, whether or not we're all going to be spoiled. But
Well, 6 is supposed to come out like right when the movie comes out.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the time. I mean, it was like, was it a year between the two, or less than a year? Or I forget how long. When I feel like 4 just came out.
No, it's been about a year.
It's been about a year.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
This is the issue where in the end of 4, Scott Pilgrim had to grow up a bit. He was losing his girlfriend Ramona. He had to get a job. She basically said, you know, you got to start stepping up and being a man in this relationship, and he did. And it was a big dramatic moment at the end of 4, and he finally learned a little bit, as much as Scott Pilgrim can, to grow up just a smidge in order to keep his girlfriend. And in this issue, we're starting to deal with more of the ramifications of being in an adult relationship.
Oh.
Which is really no fun for anyone. I don't know why anyone does that. But what I loved so much about this issue was, or this trade, it's an original graphic novel, is that it... It's starting to mature along with the characters, and that's not to say that any of the wacky energy and fun laugh out loud stuff is gone, but some of the more out there elements are pushed to the background in favor of an examination of what happens when your friends or your girlfriend or people around you are growing up and you're not really along for the ride yet.
Yep. And silent meals.
Yeah.
this book is predicated by silent meals.
And I thought it was some of the most incisive examination of that kind of stuff. There was some uncomfortable scenes between Scott and his girlfriend that were really hit home for anyone who's been in a relationship that doesn't go well.
That scene in bed, just killed me. Totally killed me.
Yeah, it's funny because this is a book that's based on big wacky video game fighting between Scott and Ramona's ex-boyfriends, but the most effective stuff in this is the relationship stuff and the stuff.
The book is about Scott and Ramona's relationship and the fighting stuff.
Right, but the whole thing people talk about this book is the big wacky elements. Yeah. And in this book, actually, there is the fighting, but some of the fighting is completely in the background.
Totally. Yep.
It's almost like he's decided these elements need to go. And here they go. They're going to happen behind the scenes of all the discussions about relationships.
Yeah.
Well, in that first scene when he has to fight the robot, that literally is what happens. Like, it happens in the background. Yeah. Like, the thrust of the scene is not, is he going to win the fight? Like, that's a given. And all the, you know, the conversations are what's actually important about it. So it's kind of interesting.
And even the second fight at the club where they're playing happens off page while Ramona and Knives are talking. And then there's the final fight that you do see, but it's more about the relationships in this one, and more about maybe Ramona isn't the one for Scott. Maybe this isn't so perfect that he thinks it is. Because when you're 22, 23, he turns 23 or 4 in the beginning of this. 24. When you're 23, 24, you think you know what you want. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's not what you really need. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the whole thrust of this book is maybe Scott and Ramona aren't meant for each other. And
which is sad to see. It's true, but it is also something that happens, I think, in a lot of relationships that do work out. Like, you have your moment of maybe this isn't right, you know, and you have your doubting moment before you go on to the big win. I mean, that's also, you know, sort of dramatic structure, I think, has to go that way.
And what I thought was interesting is that also there was the, you know, the hint of maybe something else with someone else, you know, which I thought was, which is interesting. And then also the, you know, the one thing that, that didn't annoy me, but that kind of kept nagging as I read through all four volumes was like when volume one started with Scott dating Knives and her being like hopelessly in love with her. And she's always been like hopelessly in love with him. And she's always been like this kind of background character going through. But now this issue came back and bit him in the ass, like what he did bit him in the ass. And that, and even though, you know what happened and why it happened and how it happened, it's just the miscommunication and the confusion that can be involved in that is what gets all jumbled up and causes the conflict, which is, I thought, was very realistic.
You know, what's interesting is that when I don't remember why I was looking at this, but when we first talked about Ron finding this book, Ron, you said, I had thought this was going to be my next new favorite relationship book. And then I found that it was something different. And I was like, that's what it is now.
No, totally. That's totally what it is.
It came back around.
I know.
Took a left turn, but then it took three more. And now we're straight back, I think.
This is a mature work. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of levels happening here. And this is, especially if you go back and look at the early Scott Pilgrim books, the art is on another level than it was in the beginning. The intricacy of the storytelling, the depth of the emotions that are being explored.
Yeah,
I mean, this had me from one page laughing out loud to the next page, like, just, you know, heart sunk in my stomach. Like, it's just, there's so much happening in this book, and it's a fast read, like they all are, but there's so much packed into this story.
Yeah,
that it's the pressure that comes to every one of these that comes out, you know. Each one mounts the pressure. Like, this is, more people jump on the book, more people talk about how great it is, and each one comes out and meets that expectation level. And it's just amazing.
How worried were you when you cracked it open?
Very.
Yeah, I was like, oh, please be good, please be good, please be good. Like, I'm just waiting for the shoe to drop.
I was just mesmerized by the holographic foil cover, to be honest.
Yeah, way to step it up. That's
all that I was like, it's got to be good. Look at it, shiny.
Yeah. But I was like, oh God, please be good, because I could just, you know, like, because part of it, because we've enjoyed it so much and we touted it so much, and like, I can't imagine what the pressure Brian must feel, you know, like, in terms of, you know, how do you separate yourself from the critical response and the fact that people love it, you know,
like, so. Fat checks.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. So, yeah.
Well, the movie's in production, so I'm guessing with a really nice surround sound and home theater.
Yeah.
That might be one way.
A big TV.
Just block the rest of the world out.
This is my favorite one by far.
Yeah.
This one.
Yes, it was, yeah.
I don't think Ramona's one for him. I think that's how it's going to come down. Aww. I think a lot of the seeds were laid in this issue. It seemed pretty obvious.
Yeah. That he's really supposed to be with what's his face, his former gay roommate.
That would be a twist.
I didn't see that coming at all.
I think that would really throw a lot of people off.
The one who's all consistently backing him up and always sees the good in him.
Oh, it's gonna make me cry.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Yeah. This one totally got me. There was. That silent dinner and then the bed scene. Oh my God, that was that hit.
I'm really kind of in an emotional state because the whole ER thing has really been getting to me. So like, it's
okay, we got to move on. We got to move on. I'm not there yet.
All right, so Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, Scott Pilgrim Volume 5.
And you can get that at In Stock Trades when it becomes in stock.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of a shipping problem. Fucking Diamond.
Diamond took this month to move their facilities, and therefore a lot of books have gotten short shipped to a lot of stores, and one of those books was Scott Pilgrim, Volume 5, which a lot of stores either didn't get at all or only got one or two copies of.
Listen, so I think when the biggest indie graphic novel series has a new volume come out, and Watchmen is moving some books, it's the best time to make sure that distributors and comic shops are low.
It's so annoying.
It's a good choice. I don't really know anything about the industry. I could be talking out of my ass here.
So
doesn't seem to make sense.
But if you haven't yet, go to ifanboy.com and read Connor's excellent Book of the Month review. In fact, Brian Lee O'Malley himself at the New York Comic Con commented on that it was a really good, well-written review and one of his favorites. So good job, Connor.
Holding off vomit as I was writing the end of it.
Like literally, like in your cuffed your mouth, your hand over your mouth.
The bile was pooling in my mouth as I got to the end.
It's not a reflection on the book.
No. But when I tell you it was the last thing I did before I got horribly sick, that was literally the last thing I did. I hit save and I ran to the bathroom.
And then the dam burst. So if you write into email, we will read them sometimes.
Right. So our first email.
I'm just changing the subject horribly. This is a bad segue.
Our first email comes from Ryan, who goes by the Dude 007 on ifanboy.com. And Ryan says that he recently revisited Grant Morrison's JLA run, and the part that really seemed to stand out for him was the way that he handled the Electric Blue Superman. I think we all know what a fiasco this was, from the glow-in-the-dark cover to the end when he was split into a red and blue version of himself for some reason. Here he took the concept that no one liked and ran with it. I forgot all the cool shit that he had him do, like absorbing the energy of an explosion while still leaving light energy as a means of covering up their escape, or reversing the polarity of the moon so it wouldn't crash into the Earth. Morrison still made you feel that even though Superman didn't have a great handle on his own powers, he was still the most powerful member of the JLA, despite the fact that he was wearing the most powerfully retarded costume on the whole team. What were your thoughts on the Blue Superman? I'm not a big DC guy, so I would have taken it or left it. Keep it up. Love you guys. Love you too, Ryan.
No, it's true. The Blue Superman was dumb, but Morrison, actually, you know, in the way he does, actually thought about it and made it make sense and made it cool.
This is the only Blue Superman I read. I didn't read any of that stuff. So to me, I never minded. I was like, oh, it was kind of cool. Like it all.
Yeah,
the books was
kind of, you know, it was kind of lame. But as Morrison does, he literally said, what would this actually mean? What could you actually do with this? And he did some badass stuff with him.
And it wasn't a problem, if I remember. Like, it didn't detract from anything. It was just like, oh, Superman's blue and electric, and here we go. You know, like it was.
And then he wasn't. And then he was, you know, like in the first couple, he wasn't. He was normal, and then he was blue, and they were like, hey, you're blue. Yeah, I'm dealing with it. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, so if you have a question about Superman or any other character, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
When Ron dies, we're going to go and find like a secret Superman shrine that he never – he's been playing up how he hates him, but really in reality, he's got like a secret room. You press a button and it opens up and there's Superman stuff everywhere.
When I'm alone –
This is my son, Kal-El. What?
When I'm alone in my apartment, I walk around in a Superman costume and
Oh boy.
I made it weird, didn't I?
Netflix has over 100,000 titles with no late fees. They got a lot of Superman movies. Free shipping both ways. Blu-ray titles, which Josh takes part in. Fast delivery. Majority of their shipments in one day. Plan starting as low as $4.99 a month with a 2-week free trial when you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy and make sure you put that www in the front.
I love that. Like I love how like he says it with disdain.
I know. It's like it's some cult he doesn't. It's like, well, Josh should be with us until he joined the WWAA. You know, like whatever the weird, strange cult down the road is.
So www.netflix.com/ifanboy. Onto the voicemail. A question.
Yes.
A question of money.
Hey guys, it's Jason from Portland, and I had a question about salaries in comics and how much, a average writer and artist for one of the major publishers might make. I'm thinking not the Bendises of the world, but you know, maybe a Tomasi or something like that. And if you had any sense of what the ranges were between people who write and draw for comic books. Thanks.
That is a good question, and you know, it's one I've certainly thought about a lot, and you know, I've tried to do research about it, but sort of short of asking the people who I know in comics, like, hey, what are you pulling down after taxes? It's not something that's really publicized. I know there's sort of rules of thumb. Artists get paid more than writers per page. Freelance guys, most of them are freelance. If you're working for Marvel or DC or something like that, the sort of what I've heard, and I could be completely off here, but you know, anywhere between $100 and $300 a penciled page, you know, inkers and colorists and letterers get paid less for that.
Letterers are down in the double digits per page.
Yeah, if you're a big name, if you're John Cassaday, you can make a lot more than that per page, or just you know on a project. But you know, you're at a page rate. If you think about it, like $100 a page, you'd have to do one page a day every single day to make $500 to $700 a week. Like it takes a long time to, you know, get up there. And that's, you know, that's cranking out stuff every single day, if you can even do a page a day.
Better. That's a book a month.
Right, exactly. You know, but you know, I'm sure Steve McNiven makes a lot more than that. Writers, I think, are closer to, I don't know, like $100 a page, you know, 90, 80, something like that from what I've seen. But that it's not something I can really confirm. Because it doesn't really get published. It's just, you know, hearsay, what's going on. You know, but there's guys, you know, you think about like a guy like Pete Tomasi. He was an editor, which means he had a salary of some kind, and he quit so that he could do, you know, books. So there's that, but then there's also the, you know, the real that'll get you by. But the real thing that's important for guys who are doing indie graphic novels, you know, is back end sales and stuff. So if you're doing a book for Image, for example, you don't get paid anything until the sales come in, you know, and you might not really see anything until trades start coming in, you know, and hopefully they sell in some sort of amount. You know, it's not an easy business.
Then there's the more the long term play, which is like if you're doing creator owned work, then there's, you know, there's the Hollywood options and things like that, which can give you money. But then also if you're doing, you know, if guys are doing work for Marvel DC, they have finally after years and years of other creators you know, taking the hits, there now, you know, royalty kind of programs where if you create a character and this sort of thing, you get some sort of kickback and all this kind of stuff. And there are ways to make money down the road too. So
it's trade sales, I think, for the big guys pay royalties on them. So if you do a trade, you know, you do a book, it's collected in your trade, you get paid, you know, subsequently for that also. It's a small percentage. It's really, you've got to like diversify yourself and figure out all sorts of ways. A lot of these comic book writers do other work, you know, whether it's video game writing or consulting or things like that. That happens a lot.
And you get people, you know, like for example, I know, you know, like we've read very publicly the guys who do Phonogram, you know, Kieran Gillen and Jamie McElvey were, you know, they posted that, you know, Phonogram number 2 was delayed because they just, you know, they've got to pay their bills and it's not because the book isn't doing well, just because it's not making a ton, yada, yada. And I know for a fact that Jamie, not only in addition to comic work, takes on like illustration work and like for ad agencies and things like that. Like artists who are comic artists aren't just limited to doing comic art. A lot of times they'll do commercial art and things like that. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all, you know, eventually it can come around, but it also takes a while to get there.
And it's also interesting that some artists, depending on, again, it's depending on their success, but original art business and also con sketches and things like that have become a big part of the business as well as a way for them to make money, which is funny because it's like the artist gets this, like they get paid to draw the page for the company, and then sometimes when they get their art back, they can sell the page at anywhere from $100 to $300 per page. Writer doesn't really get to sell a script unless he does a script book. You know, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but the difference being a writer can do more than one book a month, theoretically.
Yeah, exactly.
So like you probably, you know, doing it as a full-time job, unless you're somebody, you know, unless you're Frank Miller or something, you're probably not going to get paid enough to, you know, to script even, you know, like one book a month or something. You've got to do several. You remember Bendis does a lot of books in a month, you know, but at one point he was doing like 5 or 6.
Yeah,
like,
He was doing Daredevil, he was doing Ultimate Spider-Man, he was doing New Avengers, he was doing, Powers.
Alias.
Yeah, Pulse, yeah. It's
really about, for writers, it's very much about getting your hands in as many pies as you can.
Yeah.
And doing as many things, and you know, and for all that stuff, it's about name profile. The bigger your name is, the more money you are going to get paid.
Yeah.
Oh. I like pie.
So if you have any more questions about the way the comic book industry works, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
And if you're listening in the industry, because I know you're out there, you know, and you have more information on it, you can tell us. You can tell us anonymously. We'll tell people. I mean, it's one of those things people want to know.
Yeah. I enjoy whenever we answer a question complete with speculation.
Yeah. No. None of us have been paid to work in the comic book industry ever.
Well, I did do some research on it, and I want to work in the comic book industry, so you know, it's the kind of thing I pay attention to. So you pick up bits about it, but it's nothing like – it's very opaque. It's not – you know, you can't quite tell exactly what the real answer is.
Yeah.
I've talked to lots of people like, well, you get paid some. It's not a lot. And I'm like, all right. Yeah. I don't know what that means.
All right.
Anyway.
So so we survived the New York Comic Con and just in time to deal with WonderCon.
Yay.
Oh, it's like we just got back to England and now they're sending us back to Germany.
So WonderCon in San Francisco is coming. It's next weekend. What's going on with iFanboy?
There are panels to be seen where we can be tracked down. If we'll be walking around the floor and doing stuff, but there is a podcasting panel. It's Saturday night, I believe. Do you know the exact time?
Saturday evening, 5 to 6:30, I believe it is.
Yeah. Yep. With Leni Taylor from the I Read Comics podcast. And it will be a more interactive sort of podcasting panel than perhaps you've been used to in the past.
Yeah,
it isn't going to be us standing up there saying, we hope podcasting will become a big form of media for the 9th time. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, we want to get some of the audience involved. We're going to be talking about the comics. We're going to be, you know, like it's going to be more.
It's an interactive panel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So.
Wait, hold on. I got the date on that. That's Saturday from 5 to 6:30 in room 220.
Yes.
Ooh, too. And this stuff will all be up on the website too. And also, I will be moderating or hosting, I suppose, the Alex Robinson panel from 1 to 2 on Saturday also at WonderCon, where we're going to, you know, him and I will talk. We'll talk about some of his work.
And dogs.
We'll probably talk about dogs, but not a lot.
So you're moderating the panel. So how nervous are you?
I haven't thought about it, and I think that that helped.
Okay, that's good.
The best thing to do is to go in there with no plan.
Yeah,
I'm going to go in there completely unprepared. I mean, you know, I've talked to him before at length, so it can't be that hard.
Right.
But come by. Alex is a funny guy. I don't stink. So that's the best I can say for myself.
All right, so that's what's going on at the convention.
Room 232.
So that's what's going on at the convention. But everyone knows historically at WonderCon, it's not what goes on at the convention. It's what goes on at night of the convention.
Sounds so good.
Yeah. The first night will be Friday night, and that's the return of the much-heralded Tiki Tour that we do with Isotope. The people at Isotope and us partner up. We did this 2 years ago. You may have seen it in our WonderCon show with Adam Beechin. And we're doing it again.
Yes, we are partnering up on all the social events of the WonderCon with our friends at Isotope Comics. You can go to isotopecomics.com to check them out. James Syme, the proprietor. The historic Tiki Tour of going through Tiki bars of San Francisco. And Derek Robertson, how cool is that?
Derek Robertson's a special guest, and with Beechin, I think did we make it to 8 or 9 tiki bars?
No, there were 8 tiki bars on the itinerary. We made it to 5, which was
– We didn't make it more than 5.
We made it to 5. We got into an argument the other day at the store about it. We made it to 5, which is unheralded, because the thing with the Tiki Tour is there are 2 things that will get in the way. Either Father Time, because bars close early in San Francisco, like 2 o'clock, they're done. So Father Time or Uncle Liver. So, because the whole thing is you got to go on every Tiki Tour and you have to have a drink. So, right. not only the strong-willed can make it to every bar. But we're going to start at the historic Tonga Room, which is probably the best Tiki bar in the city. So, if you're in San Francisco, if you want to see some of the sights of San Francisco, a great walking tour of the city. It's a lot of fun. Definitely don't miss the Tiki Tour.
We had about 30 people last
year. We added people. We started with like 20 or so. Then we went to the second bar. Remember, we added all those people. Like we were rolling like 30, 40 by the time we met in the middle of the tour. So
yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, and this is back by popular demand, by the way, too. A lot of people were asking to do this again. So that's why we're doing it. So
maybe we'll bring a camera and someone will drunkenly interview Derek Robertson.
Yeah, maybe. we're not just stopping at the Tiki Tour Friday night. No, Saturday night is your opportunity to go to Isotope Comics and experience that great comic book store at one of their historic parties. Last year, we partied with Ben Templesmith and Anthony Johnson one night, and the second night was with Darwin Cook. This year is the much heralded the end of 100 Bullets party with Brian Azzarello and Dave Johnson. Brian Azzarello and Dave Johnson will be at the party. Dave Johnson's bringing art, which is going to be on display. So if you like Dave Johnson's covers from 100 Bullets, you definitely want to come check out all his great art. And the awesomest thing is that there's going to be the limited edition Isotope I Fanboy pint glass for sale with some original Dave Johnson art. So for $10, you can get yourself a pint glass, and it's super, super limited. This piece of art that Dave Johnson is only used for the pint glass, so this is the only place where you can get it.
You can see it on Fanboy. We have a post on it. But we did this for Darwin Cook. If you were at that party, those things flew off the shelves. I can use it to say, but
Brian Azzarello will glare at you free of charge.
Yes, exactly. Word of advice, if you go to the party, don't tell him you thought 100 Bullets was confusing. He doesn't take kindly to that.
Best not to look at it directly.
Yes. No, but no, honestly, it's going to be a great, great party. Last year, the Saturday night party tends to be the event of WonderCon. So if you're going to be at WonderCon, if you live in the San Francisco area, come. It's a great opportunity to shop at Isotope and to hang out with us and hang out with the other comic pros. Come to this party. It's going
to
be awesome.
I happen to know at least one other comic bro who's had a very big presence on our show in the past. Is coming too.
So so go to ifanboy.com for all the details. There's going to be a post up on the homepage. You can also go to isotopecomics.com for all the details and directions how to get to the store and that sort of thing. And we love the Isotope, so please go there and shop there.
All right. Let's whip through the boring part and get to the wacky part at the end of the boring part.
So head over to ifanboy.com where you can become a member of the ifanboy.com membership elite. For just $4 a month or $42 a year, you can get the ifanboy membership pack, which gets you some buttons and stickers and a free comic book. And if you got a little more money to spare, you can spend $10 a month or $100 a year, and you get the pack with stickers, buttons, a comic, as well as the special limited edition ifanboy members t-shirt, which you can go see at store.ifanboy.com. Or ifanboy.com/store. They both work.
They're coming.
We really appreciate the members. The shirts are shipping. We have them. Connor is slaving away to get them packed, right?
As you listen to this, they're probably being on the way, actually. So
all of the members who signed up back in December and in January have been patiently awaiting. We thank you for your patience. The stuff is coming, so we appreciate it.
The Coraline prize packs went out also for those of you members who won that. You probably have them by now, except for the dude in Australia. You're going to have to wait a little while.
It's on a boat.
So to remind everybody, we do ifanboy.com for free. Everything is for free. We love giving this content to you guys, but we need to keep our lights on. So we definitely need your help and need your need you to kind of step up and sign up for a membership. But we don't want to make it so that you get nothing for it. So we send you the t-shirt, we send you the free stuff, but also, we got some great giveaways lined up. After WonderCon, like a week or two after WonderCon, there's going to be an amazing giveaway for iFanboy members only. So stay tuned to the show for that announcement. And you can only be a member to win this one. So
the reason we keep bringing this up is we still need more members. So if you've been thinking, well, they're taken care of, it's really not. We still do need more members. The people who have signed up, thank you. It's been great. We will keep making it good for you. But if you've been thinking about it, just act on that if you can.
We appreciate it. So thank you. Thank you to everybody who has done it. Thank you to everybody who will do it. And trust me, you're going to want to be a member by like second week of March, because this giveaway is going to be awesome.
iFanboy.com is the website where all of this springs from. And you can go there every single day for fresh new content. This last week was Stack Week, where we lay our stacks bare and admit to all of the things that we haven't quite had time to read. You can read Connor's Book of the Month discussion. You can read my Pick of the Week review. And just all sorts of stuff all week. And Paul Dini, by the way, he's aging like a fine wine. They're getting better and better, I must say. Is 200? He did it all in Pirate this week. That's excellent. So make sure you get to ifanboy.com.
And while you're there, you go to ifanboy.com, the store, where you can find all of our merchandise, which is basically the membership stuff, and the Herm t-shirt, which is the, sort of Watchmen-esque.
Not at all.
Which, by the way, is flying off the shelves. So if you want to get one, get them before they go.
Those are also on the way. If you order one already, they're in the mail. So if you want to check out that Herm shirt, you can go to ifanboy.com/store. There'll be a new shirt soon in a few weeks. We'll be unveiling the next special edition shirt, and that'll be exciting too. Check that out. You can go to revision3.com/store. That's you can find the old intern shirt, which is still available. There's a few left. You can go to there and check that out.
And you might have heard that we do a video show every week, every Wednesday. So if you go to ifanboy.com every Wednesday or revision3.com/ifanboy, you can watch that video show. This past week was the first part of our New York Comic Con coverage. It was so big we couldn't contain it in one episode. So this coming Wednesday, part two of the New York Comic Con.
Literally, Jim McCann goes insane.
Yes, it's awesome.
I mean, it's a meltdown. It's amazing.
And if you can't find the video show, you can if you own a TiVo, you can find it in the video download section. You go to Apple, go to iTunes, you can download it there. Tons of ways you can find it on YouTube. Tons of ways to find the iFanboy video show. So check it all out.
And Comics Pro Mike Norton said, "Hey, it looks good on a TV."
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
so. He was surprised. Try to sound a little less surprised, Mike.
It was rough getting them to get that on the TV. It was the tech support we give. It's amazing. So, and if you have a question or if you need tech support, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail, the aforementioned 1-888-FANBOYS, 1-888-326-2697.
Cool. And you can go over to ifanboy.com/about, and you can join the social network menagerie of the Facebooks, MySpaces, Comic Spaces. Verb got a big facelift just this last week.
Yeah.
Twitter.com. All the links for that, for ourselves and our staff, are all on there. And catchy little paragraphs about who we is.
They're funny.
Yeah.
And finally, if you like the show, you can write a review for it on iTunes. That's how people find the show. It helps us get the word out and just for this show and for the video show. And even better than that is to tell your comic book store friends, your owners, the people you meet at the store, maybe the doctor you saw because you thought you were dying, but you weren't. Tell him. He might like it. You never know.
That got weird. Are you okay?
Yeah, yes.
Hey, Sam.
Okay.
I got to admit, it's good to be back, the three of us back. I missed you last week.
Oh, actually, we wanted to talk to you about that.
It has been 3 weeks since we've all done the show together.
Yeah. How about that? It's good. Yeah, it's a reunion.
And you know, people were all like, "Ah, I wish they'd get back together." Until this week, and they're like, "You know what? No, you know, maybe we appreciate a little diversity. Yeah, maybe that."
It's been 3 years. You know, enough.
I've seen it a couple times. Like, have you considered adding a fourth? Because I've been eating mac and cheese every night, and I need to switch it.
All right, so until next week, I'm Ron.
Consider adding a fourth, consider adding three new people.